Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Exchange Server Performance Tuning. My name is Aaron Clutter. Here's what we'll be covering in this session. In this session, we will look at Exchange Server Performance Tuning. Before we dive into the actual performance tips, we'll start by looking at the tools available for monitoring Exchange performance. Next, we'll look at how Exchange uses memory and how both Microsoft Windows and Exchange 2003 can be configured to avoid common memory-related performance bottlenecks. We'll discuss a number of the key settings, both in and out of the registry, that govern how Exchange uses available resources. In this session, we will cover how you can adjust these Exchange configuration components to maximize the performance of your messaging system. We'll also look at how Exchange is impacted by hardware limitations and how to get the most out of your physical Exchange platform. Finally, this session will cover a number of network-related configuration issues that can decrease the performance of your Exchange installation. We'll look at the causes of these potential network-related slowdowns and talk about how you can build your Exchange architecture to maximize network performance and decrease unnecessary network traffic. By the end of this session, you should have a good understanding of how Exchange uses system resources and how you can configure Exchange to get the most capacity and performance out of your existing messaging infrastructure. In order to get the most out of this session, you should have some background in Exchange-related technologies. As we go through this session, you'll hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we'll explain all new terms related to this session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to the session or to reference afterwards. First, you should have a background in administering Windows servers. You should also have experience with installing and configuring Microsoft Exchange servers. Since some of the performance tuning techniques in this session relate to Active Directory, you should have an understanding of fundamental Active Directory concepts and experience with Active Directory systems. Finally, you should have an understanding of how the Windows registry works and be comfortable with using RegEdit to view and modify the Windows registry. Here is the agenda for this session. The first item on our agenda is an overview of the key areas that affect Exchange performance and the tools that you can use to track the performance of your Exchange system. These tools will be essential to you as you begin to optimize your own messaging system. Next, we'll look at how Exchange uses available memory resources and how this memory usage can be optimized. We'll cover topics including how memory is allocated between user and kernel modes, and how to configure the way in which memory is deallocated. We'll also discuss concerns that are important when running Exchange on servers that have a large amount of physical memory. In the third part of this session, we'll look at the registry options that you can use to configure your Exchange store for specific messaging applications. These settings are particularly important if your Exchange infrastructure uses non-MAPI clients. We'll also take an in-depth look at the Exchange Message Transfer Agent, or MTA, and the various settings that impact MTA performance. Properly configuring the Exchange Message Transfer Agent can result in significant performance increases, particularly if your Exchange system runs in mixed mode or if your Exchange servers need to communicate with non-Microsoft messaging systems. We'll talk about how Exchange processes routing changes and how these routing changes can impact Exchange performance. For organizations with multiple Exchange servers or that have network topologies that change frequently, tuning the way in which Exchange handles routing changes can substantially decrease network traffic. In the sixth part of this session, we'll discuss the Exchange SMTP transport process. configuring Exchange to make the best use of your existing hardware resources during message queuing and transport is an important step in optimizing your messaging system. Finally, we'll look at the relationship between Exchange and Active Directory and see how appropriately planning and updating your Active Directory system can make a substantial difference in the performance of your Exchange infrastructure. Let's start by looking at the key areas that impact Exchange performance. In most cases, the overall performance of a server is determined by the component that has the lowest performance, the bottleneck in the system. The key to improving the performance of your Exchange server is being able to identify bottlenecks, determine their cause, and apply the appropriate corrective action. An in-depth guide to testing and tuning the performance of your Exchange server is available online at the URL at the bottom of this page. Most of the material in this session is covered in the guide, which you should use as a reference as you configure your own Exchange installation. Throughout this session, you'll also see references to a number of specific topic areas which refer to specific chapters in this guide. Broadly speaking, there are four key factors that impact the performance of your Exchange server. Let's look at these items now. The first of these factors is the CPU performance of your server. Generally, the processor usage on your Exchange server should maintain a load of about 60% during peak working hours. This percentage level allows room for periods of extreme load. If your processor usage is consistently greater than 75%, processor performance can be considered a bottleneck. Microsoft Exchange 2003 can fully use multiple processors, so in many cases, using servers with many processors improves performance. However, the relationship between the number of processors and performance is complex. If the server has too many processors, the overhead associated with context switching can be greater than the benefit from the additional processors. The optimum number of processors is partly determined by the role that a server plays. For example, a back-end mailbox server hosting many MAPI connections may make efficient use of an 8-processor computer. By contrast, a server used to host Microsoft Outlook Web Access makes better use of a 4-processor computer. The second factor impacting Exchange performance is the amount of physical memory available to Exchange. Exchange services typically consume no more than 3 gigabytes of physical memory. After you add operating system requirements and antivirus, backup, and management software, the total physical memory that is used can approach 4 gigabytes. On servers that are dedicated to Exchange, you do not need more than 4 gigabytes of memory. The biggest individual consumer of memory in Exchange Server 2003 is the store.exe process, which manages mailboxes and public information storage. Generally, you should have at least 32 megabytes of unused physical memory on your Exchange servers. If less than 32 megabytes of RAM is available, you'll receive a low memory warning event and Exchange performance may decrease. If less than 32 megabytes of physical memory is available on your Exchange server during peak work hours, this can be considered a system bottleneck. The third critical factor that determines Exchange performance is available disk storage. Properly planning for your Exchange storage requirements is important because unlike processors and memory, which you can scale while the network is active, storage redesign requires network downtime to implement. The storage requirements of an Exchange server depend on the role of the server. For example, a back-end server would benefit from a SAN because of the large amount of critical data that the server must store and index. On the other hand, a front-end server is more processor-intensive and does not require an advanced storage solution. It's important to note that adding larger capacity drives does not necessarily solve the performance issues related to disk storage bottlenecks. This is because larger disks may actually have slower seek and response times, decreasing the overall I/O performance of your server. Instead, a better solution is to add additional drives to handle concurrent access to Exchange logs, database files, and storage groups. In general, you should have at least 2 spindles for the log drive and at least 2 spindles for the database files. It's a good idea to add a spindle for each additional expected 100 disk I/O operations per second, since typically spindle can handle approximately 100 random disk I/O operations per second. As the disks on your server become saturated, add more spindles to the database. The final factor impacting Exchange performance is your server's network connection. Most of the network interface subsystem is tuned automatically, since server-based network adapters are capable of detecting the type and level of traffic passing through the network interface, and they self-tune to reflect this information. Beyond making sure that you have the latest device driver on your server, there's not much to do here. For mailbox servers, a full duplex 100 megabits per second network connection is typically sufficient. However, if you plan to back up and restore across the network, consider using gigabit Ethernet. Generally, the greatest bottleneck in a front-end and back-end server configuration is the network that separates the two sets of servers. Front-end servers can consume 100 megabit LAN connection. This means it's a good idea to consider using multiple switched fast Ethernet networks of gigabit Ethernet connections between the servers in your Exchange messaging infrastructure. There are several tools available which can help you fine-tune the performance of your Exchange installation. Some of the performance testing tools for Exchange are installed with Microsoft Windows, and others can be downloaded from the Microsoft website. The section of the Performance and Scalability Guide for Exchange 2003 listed at the bottom of this slide contains additional information on all of these tools. The first diagnostic tool that you should be aware of is the Exchange Stress and Performance tool. This utility simulates large number of client sessions by concurrently accessing one or more protocol servers. ESP provides modules that simulate client sessions over a large number of internet protocols and APIs, including WebDAV for Microsoft Office Outlook Web Access, IMAP4, LDAP, NNTP, POP3, and SMTP. By simulating client sessions, ESP allows you to stress test your Exchange servers. Load Simulator, or LoadSim, is a tool that simulates the performance load of MAPI clients. LoadSim helps you determine if each of your servers can handle the load that you intend them to carry. However, it's important to note that LoadSim does not account for all factors that impact server performance. Specifically, LoadSim does not simulate the following factors that can affect your server capacity: incoming unsolicited commercial email from the Internet, incoming SMTP mail flow from the Internet or other sites within your organization, use of non-MAPI protocols for account access such as POP3 and IMAP4, use of mobile devices, and public folder utilization. JetStress is a utility that helps you verify the disk performance of your servers by simulating the Exchange database and log file loads produced by a specific number of users. You can use System Monitor, Event Viewer, and Exchange Server 2003 database utilities together with JetStress to verify that your disk subsystem meets or exceeds the performance criteria that you establish. Finally, two of the most important tools for testing and monitoring your Exchange server are installed with Windows itself: the Performance Monitor and Network Monitor. Using Network Monitor, you can identify network traffic patterns and network problems. For example, you can locate client-to-server connection problems, find a computer that makes a disproportionate number of network requests, and identify unauthorized users on your network. With the Windows Performance Monitor, you can monitor a wide range of subsystems and software. The Performance Monitor also provides a common infrastructure for reporting data based upon performance counters. Using this suite of tools, you can accurately test the performance of your Exchange server system, diagnose potential bottlenecks, and retest your new server configurations prior to deploying them into a production environment. Let's go over a quick demonstration of some of these performance-related tools. In this demonstration, we'll look at some of the tools that you can use to measure the performance of your Exchange system. Using these tools allows you to create performance benchmarks before and after tuning Exchange in order to measure the effects of your configuration changes. We'll also look at the built-in Windows system tools that allow you to monitor the status of your server and your Exchange installation. One key aspect of tuning your Microsoft Exchange servers is being able to accurately benchmark the performance of your messaging system. Benchmarking performance allows you to measure the effects of system changes and to accurately plan a software and hardware configuration that will meet the needs of your organization. In this demonstration, we'll look at one of the most important tools for stress testing and benchmarking your Exchange system. This tool is the Microsoft Exchange Server 2003 Load Simulator, or Load Sim for short. Load Sim, which is a free download available on the Microsoft website, is a benchmarking tool that allows you to test how your server is running. It's important to note that Load Sim should only be used in a test environment that have no connections to your production environment, since Load Sim will create Active Directory, directory service users, and distribution lists, as well as Exchange messages and public folders in the course of running a load test. The first step in benchmarking the performance of your Exchange system with Load Sim is defining a test topology. In this window, you can select which Exchange servers you want to test. Next, select the storage group on the Exchange server where test messages should be created and user activity simulated. To simulate client requests to and from mailbox stores in different storage groups, you can create additional storage groups on your Exchange server. After you create these additional groups and set up the load sim test on your client computer, you can disperse users across storage groups to test this scenario. In this case, however, we'll just be testing activity within a single storage group. Here you can define the number of users that load sim should simulate for each mailbox store. Since this is just a demonstration of how to use the tool, we'll limit the test to 5 users. However, a load sim client machine with 256 megabytes of RAM should be able to simulate up to 500 simultaneous users. For even larger number of users, LoadSim can be run on multiple client machines connecting to the same server. LoadSim offers two options for how it handles logins of simulated users. Select this first option if you want LoadSim to consume fewer CPU cycles on the client computer. If you choose this option, the account on which you are logged on must be mail-enabled. It's also important to note that if your Exchange servers are running Exchange Server 2003 with Service Pack 1, the maximum number of sessions on the same user is limited to 32. Select the second option, Login to Users Using Their Respective Accounts, if you want to ensure that user login actions are simulated as realistically as possible. However, when this option is enabled, the memory and resource consumption by LoadSim increases significantly. If you run LoadSim using this option, consider increasing the memory or upgrading the CPU on the client computer to ensure that LoadSim operates efficiently. In this example, we'll have LoadSim use the same account for all simulated user logins. Enter the password here that LoadSim should assign to all users that it creates. Here you can configure the number and size of distribution lists that LoadSim creates in the course of building its test topology. As you can see, LoadSim supports both static and dynamic query-based DLs. In this case, we'll use a static distribution lists and limit the number of DLs per site to 100. One of the important features of LoadSim is that it can simulate public folder activity in addition to single user and distribution list-based message activity. This pane allows you to specify the number of public folders that should be created and configure the depth and complexity of the public folder tree. In this scenario, relatively little public folder activity occurs in the messaging system of this organization. To accurately simulate typical messaging activity, we'll limit the number of subfolders to 50 and reduce the maximum number of messages in each folder. After defining a test topology, we can go ahead and allow LoadSim to create the objects it will use for benchmarking the performance on the Exchange server. Here you can see that LoadSim successfully created the users, mailboxes, and distribution lists that we specified. it's a good idea to double-check the creation of LoadSim objects using the Active Directory Users and Computers MMC. Here we can see the 5 test users created by LoadSim. And here we can see the distribution groups that LoadSim created. Now let's move on to configuring the LoadSim test itself. The first aspect of the test that we need to configure is the duration for which the simulation should be run. A typical test with an average number of users should be set to run for about 8 hours, and generally you should allow at least 2 hours for a sufficient warm-up of both your client and server computers. Also, it's a good idea to perform a long calibration test run before you run your actual tests. For example, if you perform an 8-hour test run and find variation from hour to hour, but not between 2-hour segments, the results are consistent. This indicates that your test runs should include at least 2 hours where the server has reached a sustained baseline of consistent behavior. Alternately, you can specify that you want to control the duration of the test manually. In this case, we need to establish the ability of the test client to connect to the server before beginning the benchmarking process itself, so we'll use the manual control mode. The next step is to add test clients to the simulation. Here you can specify which Exchange server the client running LoadSim should connect to. You can also specify a user type for each client machine to simulate. Use the heavy user type for most tests because it most closely simulates real user activity. However, know that the heavy user profile does not simulate network traffic or other activities that occur in a production environment. Do not use benchmark numbers obtained from heavy profile tests for deployment purposes. Finally, specify the name of the test client itself. If we are running LoadSim on multiple test computers to simulate extremely heavy user loads, we'd repeat this step for each client participating in the simulation. With LoadSim's remote control functionality, results from all the test clients would be gathered and collated on a single computer, providing accurate, cumulative performance data. LoadSim gives you control over how each simulated user accesses and uses the messaging system. Here you can specify the frequency with which each user sends messages through Exchange and how the messages are sent. You can also control how often each simulated user checks their email, the number of replies to each received email item, and the number of attachments sent. Additional categories of behavior that LoadSim allows you to control include public folder usage, usage of the Exchange calendar and meeting request functions, and the creation of new contacts. Here you can set the initialization parameters for this simulation, which control how many inbox messages, public folder messages, and contacts are created per user to the simulation itself. We'll significantly reduce the number of items to be initialized since this is only a connectivity test. We can now initialize the messaging objects used for this simulation. Initialization creates public folders and initial messages that will be used during the simulation. Here, LoadSim asks whether we want to initialize public folders from this test client. If a simulation involves multiple test clients, only one client should initialize public folders to avoid folder duplication. In this case, since only one test client is being used, we'll go ahead and initialize public folders. LoadSim is now creating the initial user profiles, public folders, and messages for this simulation. The message window provides information about the progress of the initialization. While the initialization is in progress, we can use the Windows Task Manager to monitor the performance of this Exchange server. The Task Manager provides a good overview of CPU and memory usage. Use the Task Manager to provide a basic snapshot of the available resources on your Exchange server. Remember that in general, the CPU usage on your Exchange server should not exceed 60% during normal working conditions, and your Exchange server should always have at least 32 megabytes of available memory. If your CPU usage during normal working conditions exceeds 60%, or your available memory falls under 32 megabytes, then you have a processor or memory performance bottleneck. The Task Manager also allows us to monitor the size of specific Exchange processes. The store.exe process is generally the Exchange process that consumes the most memory and processor time, so watching the behavior of this process is good for helping track the overall resource consumption of your server. And the Networking tab provides an overview of network activity on the Exchange server. After the initialization process completes, we can now begin the simulation run itself. While the simulation runs, let's look at some of the other tools available for monitoring the status of your Exchange servers. The Windows Performance Monitor is a Microsoft Management Console snap-in that you can use to monitor a wide range of subsystems and software on your Windows computer. This Performance Console is the single most important tool for monitoring the status of your Exchange servers. Here, the Performance Monitor provides a current view of the paged memory, hard disk, and processor usage of the system. The MMC provides a common infrastructure for reporting data based on performance counters. Performance counters are available for various aspects of the system related to Exchange messaging and by Exchange itself. Let's walk through the process of monitoring some of these systems. Using this dialog box, we can add new counter objects to be monitored to the console. You can monitor the status of systems remotely by specifying a computer name to monitor. In this case, however, we're interested in monitoring the status of the local machine. The console groups available counters into different performance object categories. Each category contains one or more counters. After you install Microsoft Exchange on a server, a number of performance objects related to Exchange become available. These counters allow you to measure virtually all aspects of Exchange activity, and definitions of the different counters can be found on the Microsoft website. The MS Exchange IS performance object is the top-level set of performance counters for the Exchange Information Store. The RPC operations per second counter in this performance object is a good rate to measure overall Exchange workload because all MAPI-based actions use the RPC protocol. So let's add this counter to the console. The Explain button provides additional information about the function of each counter. Here, for example, we see that the RPC requests counter is the number of client requests that are currently being processed by the information store. In addition to real-time performance data, this console can provide overall statistics about your Exchange system. For example, the messages delivered counter is the number of total messages delivered by Exchange to all recipients since this Exchange instance was started. Here you can select the specific mailbox instance store to be monitored. There's only one option in this list since this Exchange server contains only a single information store and a single mailbox store. The console now contains two graphs tracking the two performance counters that we selected. By choosing appropriate counter objects, you can quickly create a custom view that allows you to track key metrics of your messaging system. So now let's switch back to LoadSim and stop the simulation so that we can review the data that has been generated. Here, LoadSim asks whether we want to save the performance simulation data in topology that we just created. By saving sim files containing specific simulation settings, you can reuse the same configuration to perform identical load tests against an Exchange server over time. For now, we'll discard these changes. LoadSim saves the results of its simulations in the lsperf.log file, which is created in the LoadSim directory. This file is a comma-delimited text file that lists the actions and response times collected by LoadSim. Each line of this file contains the date and time that the action was generated, the name of the mail action that was performed, the time in milliseconds that it took to complete the action, and a unique action ID generated by LoadSim. Each line also records the weight associated with an action. Weights are intended to reflect the most common actions a user performs, and are used to calculate the weighted averages and percentile response time for various actions. In this format, however, the information generated by LoadSim is not very useful. For a more readable version, you can import the comma-delimited portion of lsperf.log into Excel or other spreadsheets. LoadSim also comes with a command line tool to generate statistical data from the result log. This command line tool, lslog, is automatically installed in the LoadSim directory. In addition to generating statistical data based on LoadSim log files, lslog can merge and truncate multiple log files. For now, we'll just use lslog to generate an overview of the log data. Here, lslog reports on the response times in milliseconds for clients performing different actions at the 50th percentile, the 95th percentile, and the mean response time. In conjunction with performance counters that we reviewed earlier, this statistical data allows you to accurately measure the performance of your Exchange system, identify bottlenecks, and analyze the results of your tuning procedures. Now that we've covered the general factors that impact exchange performance and the tools that you can use to diagnose potential bottlenecks, let's move on to the next item on our agenda. Our next topic is optimizing memory usage in Exchange. Choosing appropriate memory usage options for your Exchange server can significantly increase the performance of your messaging system, particularly if you're running Exchange on servers with extremely large quantities of physical memory. Specifically, if your servers have 1 gigabyte or more of physical memory, you may be able to increase your server performance by using the /3GB switch. Windows 2000 and 2003 can address a total of 4 gigabytes of virtual address space. By default, 2 gigabytes of this is reserved for the kernel operating system, and 2 gigabytes is reserved for user mode programs like Exchange. However, on systems with more than 1 gigabyte of physical memory running Exchange, this is not the most efficient way to allocate memory. Additionally, Exchange calculates the memory that it allocated to database buffers based on the amount of physical memory present on the server. Physical memory above 1 gigabyte can cause a disproportionate amount of the 2 gigabytes of virtual memory to be allocated to database buffers, which can cause virtual memory fragmentation problems, performance issues, or out-of-memory issues. You can resolve these issues by using the /3GB switch. By adding a /3GB switch to the boot.ini file of your operating system, you can reallocate the virtual address space distribution to give user mode programs 3 gigabytes of space and limit the kernel to 1 gigabyte. However, it's important to remember that the /3GB switch should only be used on computers with more than 1 gigabyte of physical memory. Also, this switch is only required on computers that contain mailbox stores or public folder stores. There's no need to set the switch on Exchange servers that do not contain data stores. If you do use the /3GB switch to increase the performance of your system, there are 2 other memory-related settings that you should be aware of. When the /3GB switch is set on an Exchange mailbox server, the store.exe process has more virtual address space in user mode, and the kernel address space is reduced to 1 gigabyte. This can result in significantly improved performance for Exchange. However, this memory reallocation can also cause problems if a heavily loaded server runs out of page table entries. Running out of PTEs may cause your server to experience resource failures when writing data to the disk or network connection failures. To resolve this issue, you may need to edit the number of page table entries available to the kernel. If your server is running Windows 2000, you can control the number of PTEs available to the kernel by editing the system pages registry value located in HKLM system /current control set /control /system manager/memory management. Typically, a value of 30,000 will be appropriate for use in conjunction with the /3GB switch. If your server is running Windows Server 2003, set the system pages value to 0 and set the /USERVA switch to in the boot.ini file to a value of 3030. These settings allow for more system page table entries on the server, which is critical for Exchange systems using the high memory /3GB option. When considering how to get the most efficient use from your server's memory, it's also important to think about how memory is deallocated. When memory is freed at a given address, the Windows Heap Manager checks how many contiguous bytes are free around that address. After the check is complete, the Heap Manager can do one of two things: keep the contiguous memory block committed, or decommit the contiguous memory block and mark it as reserved only. Under normal circumstances, the heap manager aggressively marks free memory blocks as deallocated in order to maximize the amount of memory available for other applications. However, by default, the heap manager does not necessarily combine all free blocks or make new allocations. Therefore, blocks may be decommitted and become useless holes in the virtual address space. This type of memory fragmentation is an issue that may significantly affect the performance of Exchange servers with large amounts of physical RAM. The heap decommit free block threshold registry key provides better control of how the memory is handled as it is freed. This registry key controls the number of freed bytes above which the heap manager decommits the memory. Instead of retaining and reusing the memory, if you set this registry key to a high value, the heap manager is more effective when making sure that no bytes are decommitted. This means that with an effective threshold setting, virtual address fragmentation is lessened or even avoided. Now let's see a demonstration of how these settings related to memory usage can be configured. In this demonstration, we'll look at a concrete example of configuring the various settings that configure how Exchange uses memory resources. The options we'll be configuring are useful when running Exchange on servers with extremely large amounts of physical memory installed, more than 1 gigabyte. In this scenario, we'll be configuring Exchange to make the best use of its available resources on a server with 2 gigabytes of physical memory. Windows Server 2003 includes support for a startup switch that lets you tune the allocation of use of memory and memory address space. Regardless of the amount of physical memory in your system, Windows uses a virtual address space of 4 gigabytes, with 2 gigabytes allocated to user mode processes like applications and 2 gigabytes allocated to kernel mode processes. On systems that have 1 gigabyte or more of physical memory, the /3GB startup switches can be used to allocate more memory to applications, up to 3 gigabytes, and less memory to the kernel. This additional virtual address space helps reduce the amount of memory fragmentation in the virtual address space of the Exchange Information Store process. To set this switch, edit the boot.ini file. After the switch has been added and the system has been rebooted, more memory will be allocated to user mode applications like Exchange. It's important to note that the /3GB switch should not be used on Windows 2000 Server or Windows Server 2003 Standard Edition because it can cause application or operating system failures. If you set the /3GB switch on your Exchange server, it's also important to set the /USERVA startup switch, which allows for more system page table entries on the server. This value causes an additional 40 megabytes to be allocated to the operating system and enables you to add more users without consuming all the available system resources and encountering low memory errors. This change will only take effect after the computer is restarted. Another important aspect of tuning the way that Exchange uses memory resources is configuring parameters for the memory deallocation process. When memory is freed at a given address, the operating system heap manager checks how many contiguous bytes are free around that address. After that check is complete, the heap manager can either keep the contiguous memory block committed or decommit the memory block and mark it as reserved only. The heap decommit free block threshold registry key specifies the number of contiguous bytes above which the memory is decommitted. By default, the heap manager does not necessarily combine all free blocks or make new allocations. This means that small blocks may be decommitted and become useless holes in the virtual address space. On systems with 1 gigabyte or more physical memory installed, you can control how memory is handled as it is freed using the heap decommit free block threshold registry key. When editing this value in the registry, you must configure it with a hex value of 000400000. Microsoft does not support any other value for the heap decommit free block threshold key. In addition, only Exchange Server 2000 and Exchange Server 2003 support the use of this registry key, and only when there is 1 gigabyte or more of physical memory installed. Make sure not to use this registry key on a system that has less than 1 gigabyte of physical memory installed, since this setting can cause instability in such an environment. Again, this setting will only take effect after the computer is restarted. These techniques should help you optimize how Exchange uses memory on your Exchange servers. Next on our agenda is a look at how the Exchange Store and Extensible Storage Engine, or ESE, can be tuned for your specific messaging application. Appropriately configuring your Exchange data stores can help improve client-side performance, particularly if your organization uses non-MAPI messaging clients. The first step towards optimizing the performance of your Exchange Store is planning how your stores are allocated between storage groups. Microsoft Exchange Server 2003 can handle up to 25 databases per server. The total storage space is made up of a maximum of 4 production storage groups with 5 databases per storage group, and a recovery storage group that can handle up to 5 databases for recovery purposes. In Exchange 2000, administrators were recommended to add as many databases as possible to each storage group. This resulted in a topology like the one shown in this slide. However, in Exchange 2003, a different topology is recommended. Instead of adding multiple databases to a single store, with Exchange 2003, it's recommended that you add an additional storage group for each new database until the maximum number of storage groups has been created. This recommendation lets you spread the load of mailboxes across as many stores and storage groups as possible. This creates a more easily manageable Exchange storage topology. This topology also permits individual databases to be smaller, permitting better drive I/O management and recoverability. In addition to updating the Exchange Store topology, you can also improve the performance of the Exchange Store by setting appropriate client compatibility values. Messaging clients that access Exchange using either the IMAP4 or POP3 protocol use the streaming store file for reading and writing mailbox data stored as MIME content. Since MIME content is the native format for both IMAP4 and POP3 clients, client access is extremely fast in this scenario. If you use the Move Mailbox functionality in Exchange System Manager, or the Active Directory users and computers snap in to move a mailbox that is accessed by an IMAP4 or POP3 client, the data in the moved mailbox is promoted into the Extensible Storage Engine store format, and the content is converted from MIME content to MAPI content. After this conversion, when an IMAP4 or POP3 client logs on, a MAPI to MIME conversion of the mailbox data must take place. This conversion happens in the Windows TMP folder of the server, which is usually not a disk that has a large number of spindles. This means that non-MAPI clients may experience significantly decreased performance when accessing data from MAPI stores. This behavior occurs because the disk that the TMP folder is located on cannot keep up with all the disk activity that Exchange generates to convert messages. One way to resolve this issue is to move the TMP folder to a disk that has a high-performance caching controller and enough spindles to handle the I/O activity generated by the message conversion process. Another possible resolution is to set the IMAP4 and POP3 compatibility registry keys. Setting these two keys disables exact message size calculation for IMAP4 and POP3 clients respectively, which limits the amount of processing necessary during message conversion. If your organization includes large numbers of non-MAPI clients that are connecting to MAPI data stores, taking these steps can significantly decrease the load on your Exchange servers. Let's walk through a demonstration of setting these compatibility values now. In this demonstration, we'll cover the POP3 and IMAP4 compatibility settings, which configure how Exchange converts MAPI data for non-MAPI clients. In this scenario, a single Exchange server handles a large number of both MAPI and non-MAPI clients, all of which are connecting to the same data store. We'll go through the process of configuring this server to increase its performance with non-MAPI client connections. One way of significantly enhancing the performance of your Exchange servers is configuring them suitably for the clients that will be connecting to those servers. When the POP3 client logs on to an information store that uses the MAPI format, exact message sizes are calculated, and MAPI to MIME conversions of the mailbox data occurs in memory and on the disk of the server. In some cases, this conversion means that very large temporary files may be created on the Exchange server. The conversion from MIME to MAPI may also cause system latencies and can cause POP3 clients to experience long delays. In this scenario, a large number of POP3 clients are connecting to this Exchange server, which contains a MAPI format store. To improve performance, we can add a registry key that enables POP3 compatibility mode. By creating the compatibility key and assigning it a hex value of FF, FF, FFE, we can disable exact message size calculation for POP3 clients. Now, when POP3 clients log on, MAPI MIME conversion will only take place when specific message data is requested. The client will also receive only estimate message size data, decreasing the amount of processing that the server needs to perform. In the same way that setting the POP3 compatibility value can increase server performance for POP3 clients, setting the IMAP4 compatibility value can increase performance for IMAP4 clients. Like POP3 clients, IMAP4 clients use MIME data. This can result in significant performance decreases, both for your Exchange server and for the client if a large number of IMAP4 messaging clients are accessing data from the MAPI databases. Again, the solution is to create a D-word key named compatibility and assign it a hex value of FFFFFE. This will disable exact message size calculation for IMAP4 clients, increasing the performance and decreasing unnecessary temp file processing. We've now looked at some of the ways that communication between messaging clients and Exchange servers can be tuned for better performance. Now let's look at how you can tune the communication that occurs between your messaging servers. The Message Transfer Agent, or MTA, is the component of Exchange that is responsible for the movement of messages between Exchange 2003 servers and earlier versions of Exchange, like Exchange 5.5. The MTA also processes messages coming from or going to other messaging systems, such as Lotus Notes, Novell GroupWise, and Microsoft Mail. In smaller organizations, the MTA processes typically do not require manual tuning. However, for larger enterprises, and particularly if your organization uses mixed-mode messaging connectors, you may see a significant performance increase from tuning the MTA parameters. Let's start by looking at some architecture considerations related to the MTA. In Exchange Server 2003, the MTA places a much greater load on system resources than in Exchange 5.5, because all messages now go through the store.exe process. As a solution, you may want to divide your servers into different routing groups, with some routing groups devoted to Exchange 5.5 servers or other non-Exchange messaging systems, and others devoted to Exchange 2003 servers. This topology will allow you to dedicate one of the Exchange 2003 servers to acting as a bridgehead server for mixed-mode message transfer. The bridgehead server is then responsible for sending and receiving messages from non-Exchange 2003 servers. The other Exchange 2003 servers in your site can use the dedicated bridgehead server to send messages to the Exchange 5.5 servers, which reduces the MTA processing overhead. There are also a number of registry settings that give you granular control over the behavior of the MTA. There are a number of registry settings that control the behavior of the Exchange Message Transfer Agent. All of these parameters can be found in the registry under hklm/system /currentcontrolset/services/msexchangemta/parameters. Again, in smaller organizations, the MTA process typically does not require any manual tuning. Also, it's important to note that these registry settings are only applicable if you are running Exchange in mixed mode. After you have converted to native mode, you should remove these registry settings, since all of these tuning procedures will decrease the performance of an Exchange in native mode. The first of these settings, DB data buffers per object, controls the number of server buffers that are configured for each database object. More buffers require more memory, but make it less likely for a database object to be rolled out to disk because of a lack of buffer space. One recommended reason for changing this value in this case is when the MTA needs to communicate with multiple Exchange Server 5.5 computers. You should also tune this value if another messaging connector is homed on this server. In these scenarios, it's recommended that you change the value data for DB data buffers per object to 6. If a given MTA does not communicate with multiple Exchange 5.5 computers, the default setting of 3 should be used. The dispatcher threads value is the number of MTA dispatcher threads. It's important to note that the actual registry value here is multiplied by 3 for the three types of dispatcher threads. This means that, for example, a registry value of 1 will result in 3 threads being created. One recommended reason for manually configuring the dispatcher thread's registry value is when the MTA communicates with more than 5 Exchange 5.5 computers, or if distribution lists are heavily used in your organization. If this applies to your organization, you should set the dispatcher threads to 3. Otherwise, you should set the dispatcher threads to the default value of 1. The kernel threads registry value is the number of platform threads that handle the presentation and session level of the OSI stack. If the MTA you are configuring communicates with Exchange 5.5 servers using RPC over slow or highly latent network connections, there are several possible values here that may improve the performance of your Exchange system. You can read about these values in the Performance and Scalability Guide. The max RPC calls outstanding registry value configures the maximum number of remote procedure call threads that are guaranteed to be processed at one time. The default value for max RPC calls outstanding is 50. In mixed mode scenarios, you should increase the value data to 128. The max RPC calls outstanding registry value is typically set concurrently with the gateway in threads and gateway out threads in registry values, which we'll cover in a moment. The MDB users registry value sets the maximum number of MDB users who are supported by the MTA. All Exchange Server users are MDB users by default, unless they are explicitly set otherwise. MDB users define the number of distinguished names, or DNs, to cache from the directory. If your organization contains more than 1,500 users, you should change the value to one-third the size of the global address list, but only to a maximum of 5,000. The RTS threads registry value is the number of platform threads that handle the reliable transfer service element level of the OSI stack. RTS threads are responsible for putting data in the queues. You should adjust the RTS threads registry value from the default of 1 to a value of 3 if the MTA that you are configuring communicates with multiple Exchange 5.5 computers, either within a site or between sites. Before moving on, let's look at a few more registry values that determine the behavior of the MTA. Remember that all of this information is also available in the Performance and Scalability Guide. These registry settings also apply to the behavior of the MTA, and as with the previous group of settings, they can be found in the registry under hklm/system/currentcontrolset/services/msexchangemta/parameters. The TCP/IP control block's registry value is the maximum number of concurrent TCP/IP connections that are supported on the server. This setting controls if this message transfer agent hosts more than one X400 connector, the TCP/IP control block's registry value should be adjusted. There should be 10 control blocks for each X400 connector being hosted, and one control block to service incoming connections. For example, if your system has three X400 connections, the appropriate value would be between 31 and 33. The transfer threads registry value is the number of MTA transfer threads. You should note that the registry value here is multiplied by 2 for the two subtypes, transfer in and transfer out, of each transfer thread. If you are configuring an MTA that communicates with more than one Exchange Server 5.5 computer, either within a site or between sites, it's recommended that you adjust the value for the transfer threads to 3. There are also two settings that you should know about that affect the behavior of the MTA, but that reside in different portions of the registry. These are the gateway in threads and the gateway out threads values. The gateway in threads value defines the number of threads available for retrieving messages from the MTA process to the information store process. When messages are received in the MTA from an Exchange 5.5 server, they move from the MTA to the information store process and then to the advanced queuing engine. In environments in which many messages reach the MTA at the same time, it's recommended that you increase the number of processing threads between the store.exe process and the MTA from 1 to 3 for all private databases on the server. You should set the gateway in threads registry value concurrently with the gateway out threads and max RPC calls outstanding registry values. The gateway out threads value works the same way as the gateway in threads setting, except that it defines the number of threads available for retrieving messages from the information store process to the MTA process. In environments in which many messages reach the MTA at the same time, it's recommended that you increase the number of processing threads from 1 to 3 for all private databases on the server. For detailed instructions on configuring both of these settings, you can refer to the Performance and Scalability Guide. Let's walk through a demonstration of configuring a number of these MTA-related settings. In this demonstration, we'll review the various registry settings that configure the behavior of the Exchange Message Transfer Agent. We'll also look at new custom registry attributes, like the gateway threads value, that can be created to further tune the behavior of the MTA. Finally, we'll step through the process of moving the MTA database, which can significantly increase performance in some cases. Generally, MTA tuning should be performed when an Exchange 2003 server must connect to both other Exchange 2003 servers and also Exchange 5.5 machines. In this scenario, we'll configure an Exchange 2003 server to maximize its performance in a mixed mode environment. By default, the Exchange 2003 message transfer agent is configured for optimal performance in a native mode environment that contains only Exchange 2000 server or Exchange Server 2003 servers. If your messaging system contains Exchange Server 5.5 servers or other non-Exchange servers with which your Exchange Server 2003 computers must communicate, you can increase performance by tuning the registry settings related to the MTA. In this scenario, Exchange Server 2003 needs to communicate with several other Exchange Server 5.5 servers in a mixed mode environment. In the following demonstration, we'll look at a number of settings and tuning techniques that can increase the performance of the MTA. Most of the registry settings that control the behavior of the Exchange MTA are located here in hkeylocalmachine/system/currentcontrolset/services/msexchangemta/parameters. The DB data buffers per object registry value is the number of 4 kilobyte database server buffers that are configured for each database object. More buffers require more memory, but make it less likely for a database object to be rolled out to disk because of a lack of buffer space. When the Exchange Server 2003 MTA communicates with multiple Exchange Server 5.5 servers, database operations may require more memory, so it's a good idea to increase this value. In this case, we'll increase the value from the default of 3 to 6. The Dispatcher Threads key controls the number of MTA dispatcher threads simultaneously created by Exchange. This number is actually multiplied by 3 for the three types of dispatcher threads: fan-out, router, and result. Again, the fact that this server communicates with multiple Exchange 5.5 machines means that additional MTA overhead, so it's a good idea to increase this value. The kernel threads value is the number of platform threads that handle the presentation and session level of the Open Systems interconnection stack. These threads are at the heart of MTA message processing. There are four recommended values for the kernel thread setting. The default setting of a hex value of 1 is recommended for native mode Exchange 2000 server or Exchange Server 2003 installations. A hex value of 3 is recommended for any MTA that communicates with Exchange 5.5 servers using RPC over slow or highly latent network connections. A value of 8 is recommended for an MTA that belongs to a site containing more than 15 Exchange 5.5 computers. And finally, a hex value of C is recommended for MTAs that belong to a site containing more than 30 Exchange 5.5 computers. This server communicates with more than 1 but fewer than 15 Exchange Server 5.5 computers, so we'll set it to a value of 3. Other settings that impact the behavior of the Exchange MTA include the max RPC calls outstanding, MDB users, RTS threads, and TCP/IP control blocks. In-depth definitions of these settings can be found on the Microsoft website. Another step in the process of tuning the Exchange Server 2003 MTA in mixed mode organizations is configuring the number of gateway in and gateway out threads created by Exchange. Gateway in threads are used for retrieving messages from the MTA process to the information store process. In environments in which many messages reach the MTA at the same time, it's a good idea to increase the number of processing threads between the stored.exe process and the MTA. To configure the number of gateway in threads, create a registry value called gateway in threads. When modifying this value, it's important to keep in mind that each thread consumes about 1 megabyte of virtual memory. Additionally, the actual number of threads created is this value multiplied by the number of databases on the server. For example, if you have 10 private databases and you set this parameter to 4, you're actually creating 40 threads, which together consume about 40 megabytes of virtual memory. In this case, we'll set the value to 5, since there is only 1 private database on this server. A total of only 5 threads will be created. If you configure the gateway in threads value, you'll also need to configure the gateway out threads registry value. The gateway out threads registry value defines the number of threads available for retrieving messages from the information store process to the MTA process, and typically the number of gateway out threads should match the number of gateway in threads on this server. Again, the actual number of gateway out threads will be the value of this setting multiplied by the number of private databases on the server. We'll set the value to 5 now to match the number of gateway in threads. A final important technique to keep in mind when tuning the Exchange MTA has to do with the location of the MTA database. By default, the Exchange MTA database and run directories are located under the path where Exchange Server 2003 is installed. On some servers, especially where Exchange is acting as a bridgehead server, you can improve performance by relocating the MTA database to a fast disk array, like a RAID 0+1 partition. Use the Exchange System Manager to relocate the MTA database. Only Exchange administrators can move the MTA database. Here you can see the MTA database is in its default location. In this scenario, the E drive is a fast RAID system, so we'll relocate the database there. It's important to note that although you can relocate the MTA database, this does not change the location of the MTA run directory. Do not attempt to relocate the MTA run directory because doing so can cause unwanted side effects. We've covered some of the ways in which you can increase the performance of Exchange in mixed mode environments by configuring the MTA. Now let's return to a topic that applies to both mixed mode and native mode environments, Exchange Routing. Exchange 2003 includes functionality to automatically detect changes in the state of a link. This information is sent out to other Exchange servers to let them know that an alternate route should be used for messages. This feature works well in small to medium-sized organizations. However, in larger environments, mass network fluctuations can cause link update floods. If your organization uses several Exchange servers and is subject to frequent network service fluctuation, it's a good idea to consider tuning how Exchange handles network changes. So, what are the settings that determine how Exchange handles these changes? In an Exchange server environment, link state information is divided into major and minor changes. Major state changes occur when an administrator changes the routing topology. These changes would include the addition of a new connector or a cost change. Major changes are always broadcast throughout an entire network of Exchange servers. Minor state changes occur when the system detects the failure or restoration of a link. When a connector state changes, the whole link state table is rebroadcast. Since this data is broadcast to all the servers in an organization, link fluctuations can cause a flood of network traffic. The more Exchange servers in your organization, the more bandwidth is potentially consumed by this broadcast traffic. The Suppress State Changes registry setting offers a solution to this issue. This value is a custom configuration setting used to suppress minor leak state changes. When Suppress State Changes is set to a value of 1, all link state traffic generated by a connector state change on the Exchange server computers are suppressed. By suppressing these changes and manually handling routing issues caused by link fluctuation, you can potentially decrease the network load caused by Exchange link state data broadcasts. Another Exchange setting that can potentially reduce network traffic is the glitch retry interval. If Exchange Server 2003 tries to route a message to a heavily loaded external SMTP system, it can receive a system busy error. In these situations, the Exchange transport goes into a state known as glitch retry. In this state, Exchange waits 60 seconds before attempting to resend the message, and it repeats this process 3 times before resorting to other actions. The glitch retry seconds value can be configured to reduce the wait time between retry attempts. If the servers that your organization communicates with are frequently busy, configuring this setting can help to prevent mass message queuing. Here's a demonstration of how these values can be configured on your Exchange servers. In this demonstration, we'll look at how to configure the settings that control how Exchange handles network link state or routing changes. Adjusting these settings may improve your network performance if your Exchange servers communicate with mail systems that are frequently busy or if your internal network is subject to fluctuation. In this scenario, we'll configure an Exchange server that exists in a highly volatile network environment where links are often down or saturated for short periods of time in order to maximize the server's performance while minimizing unnecessary network traffic. Exchange Server 2003 includes functionality to automatically detect changes in the state of a link. This information is used to inform other servers running Exchange Server 2003 that an alternative route should be used instead of the lowest cost primary route. This feature works well in small to medium-sized organizations. However, in large multi-site environments, mass network fluctuation can cause link update floods, generating excessive volumes of network traffic that result in system slowdowns. In such an environment, tuning the way that Exchange handles network error conditions can result in a significant performance increase. In this scenario, this Exchange server is part of a large server farm with an unstable network topology. We'll go through the process of tuning the server for optimal performance under these conditions. By creating a registry DWORD value named Suppress State Changes with a value of 1, you can prevent Exchange from broadcasting update notices resulting from a connector link state change. This will substantially reduce the amount of network traffic generated by the Exchange server as its network environment experiences temporary state fluctuations. Update information that results from an administrator manually changing the routing topology will still be broadcast as usual. One significant consequence of making this change is that if a link between Exchange servers goes down permanently, new routing data will need to be entered manually by an administrator. Another approach to limiting the unnecessary network traffic generated by Microsoft Exchange under some conditions is configuring the glitch retry interval. If Exchange Server 2003 tries to route a message to a heavily loaded external SMTP system, it can receive a server busy error. In these situations, the Exchange transport goes into a state known as glitch retry. In this state, Exchange Server 2003 waits 60 seconds before attempting to resend the message, and repeats this process 3 times before resorting to other actions. If external SMTP servers are consistently busy, reducing the glitch retry wait time can prevent mass message queuing on the server. By creating a decimal D word value named glitch retry seconds, you can configure the number of seconds that Exchange waits between retry attempts when it encounters a server busy error. Enter the number of seconds that Exchange should wait between retry attempts. In this case, we'll set the retry interval to 15 seconds. After making this change, you'll need to restart the SMTP service for the setting to take effect. These tips on tuning your Exchange routing configuration can help you decrease the network load created by your messaging system. Now let's move on to the next agenda item. We've already covered some techniques and settings that you can use to tune the message transfer agent on your Exchange servers. The MTA is the core process involved in SMTP transfer. However, there are several more techniques that you can use to improve the SMTP transfer performance of your Exchange system, so let's take a closer look at those now. In fact, the first method that you use to boost SMTP transfer performance is actually related to your server hardware. When messages arrive in Exchange through SMTP, the data is written to a file in the NTFS file system. By default, these files are written to a directory named mail-root on the same partition containing the Exchange program files. If you are configuring an Exchange server to act as a bridgehead or a relay server, you can improve performance by relocating the SMTP mail-root directory to a faster drive. You can move the mail-root directory using Exchange System Manager. The mail root directory setting is found under the SMTP virtual server configuration properties within System Manager. Another method of tuning the performance of the SMTP queue is by configuring the maximum queue size. Each message in the SMTP queue uses at least 4 kilobytes of memory. This means that as the queue grows very large, you can experience low memory issues on your Exchange servers. By default, the maximum number of messages that can be in an SMTP queue at any given time is 100,000. You can use the Max Message Objects Registry value to specify an alternate maximum number of messages that can exist in the SMTP queue. When that number of messages is in the queue on the server, additional inbound messages that come in through the SMTP protocol are refused with a 4XX error. Lowering this setting reduces the maximum number of messages that can reside in the queue, therefore decreasing the maximum memory footprint for SMTP. Let's move on to a demonstration of these SMTP-related tuning procedures. This demonstration covers some of the configuration steps that can improve the performance of Exchange Server's SMTP transport configuration. We'll see the process of moving the mail root directory from its default location to a fast secondary drive, and also how to set the SMTP queue size. These steps can significantly improve the performance of your front-end Exchange servers. When messages arrive in Exchange Server 2003 through SMTP, the data is written to a .eml file in the NTFS file system. By default, these files are written to a directory on the same partition containing the Exchange Server 2003 program files. In many cases, particularly on a bridgehead or relayed servers, SMTP performance can be improved by moving the SMTP mail root directory to a faster system disk. In Exchange Server 2003, you can use Exchange System Manager to move the mail root directory. Before moving the mail root directory, you need to stop any SMTP virtual servers running on your Exchange system. The mail root directory must be moved for each virtual server. Here you can see the default location for the mail root directory. In this scenario, the E drive is a fast RAID system. By moving the mail root directory to this drive, message relay performance on the server will be correspondingly increased. After the SMTP virtual server is restarted, the change in the directory location will take effect immediately. If your Exchange servers are experiencing low memory conditions under heavy message loads, one resolution to this issue is configuring the SMTP queue size. Each message in an SMTP queue uses at least 4 kilobytes of memory, and by default, the queue can contain up to 100,000 messages. A full queue, therefore, will consume approximately 0.5 megabytes of memory. In this scenario, this Exchange server has been running low on memory and experiencing poor performance under heavy message loads. To resolve this, we'll reduce the queue size. You can use this key to specify the maximum number of objects in the queue at any given time. When this number of messages is in the queue on the server, additional inbound messages that come in through the SMTP protocol are refused with a 4XX error. In this case, we'll set the maximum queue size to 50,000 objects, reducing the amount of memory used by the queue under heavy message loads by half. Let's move on to the final topic on our agenda, tuning your Exchange servers in the context of Active Directory integration. Microsoft Exchange uses the Active Directory service for a variety of functions, including global catalog lookups and messaging folder object management. This means that in the process of tuning your Exchange system, it's important to think about the relationship between your Active Directory and Exchange servers in order to eliminate any possible bottlenecks in your directory system. So let's start by discussing the Active Directory requirements of an Exchange system. All Exchange servers should have fast access to a global catalog server. The proximity of the global catalog server to both the Exchange server and to the client computer directly affects the performance of the client. For optimum performance, you should maintain a 4-to-1 ratio of Exchange processors to global catalog server processors per site. For example, if your site contains 8 single processor Exchange servers, it should also contain 2 single processor global catalog servers. Exchange 2003 can utilize global catalog servers that have up to 8 processors installed. If you have a high concentration of Exchange 2003 servers, it's a good idea to dedicate a set of global catalog servers specifically for Exchange. You can do this by creating a dedicated Active Directory site that contains both the Exchange 2003 servers and any dedicated global catalog servers. There are a number of positive effects here. First, traffic from systems other than Exchange Server 2003 is distributed to other Active Directory servers in your organization. Also, this topology makes performance analysis and management of Active Directory easier. Finally, this topology gives you better control over the Active Directory servers that are dedicated to Exchange. In addition to planning an adequate Active Directory infrastructure to support your Exchange systems, you can improve your Exchange performance by selectively indexing attributes used by Exchange in the global catalog. Indexing an attribute helps queries find objects that have that attribute more quickly and efficiently than if the attribute had no index. For example, if there are hundreds of routing groups in your Exchange organization, you may see substantially increased performance from your global catalog servers by indexing the routing group backlink attribute. There are also two important settings that you should be aware of, which control how Exchange interacts with your Active Directory system. The first of these settings control the behavior of the Exchange DS Access component. The primary function of DS Access is to maintain information about various directory-related events and operations. For example, DS Access discovers the Active Directory topology and detects if domain controllers and global catalog servers are available and responding to queries. A PDC emulator is an Active Directory Operations Master Role computer that processes requests from Windows NT 4 backup domain controllers. The PDC also handles all password updates for clients that are not running Active Directory, like NT 4 client systems. PDC emulators are also domain controllers and are therefore available for use by applications such as Exchange, and by default they are included in the DS Access server list. If non-Exchange programs are making heavy use of the PDC emulator, this can cause performance problems on the PDC emulator as well as on the Exchange server that is trying to access the PDC. This problem is particularly likely to occur if your enterprise contains a large number of NT4 computers or non-Active Directory clients. To prevent this issue, you can add the min user DC registry value to an Exchange server. This value forces DS Access to query all other available domain controllers before querying the domain controller that holds the PDC emulator operations master role. Another Active Directory related setting you should be aware of is the max active queries value. This attribute controls the maximum number of simultaneous LDAP queries for the AD server. By default, there is a limit of 20 active queries, and if this limit is reached, Active Directory returns an LDAP admin limit exceeded message. The default setting of 20 simultaneous queries makes sense in terms of providing a balance between the various operational functions of an Active Directory server. However, if you have dedicated an Active Directory server to support your Exchange infrastructure and know that this server does not need to service other client requests, it may make sense to raise this query limit. Now let's turn to an example of configuring these various Active Directory settings. Microsoft Exchange relies on the Active Directory system for many of its most common operations, including address lookups and password verification. Because of this, tuning the integration between your Exchange servers and your Active Directory system, and specifically your global catalog servers, can increase the performance of your messaging system. In this demonstration, we'll look at some of the techniques for configuring your global catalog servers to maximize Exchange performance and for tuning how Exchange interacts with the Active Directory system. Typically, your Exchange servers will reside on different physical machines from your domain controllers and global catalog servers. In this scenario, however, this Exchange server is also a global catalog server. By default, the Schema Admin tool is not visible in the Administrative Tools folder. We had to create a new snap-in console, as we've done here. Attributes that are replicated in the global catalog are universally available for searches in the Active Directory system. By indexing attributes frequently used by Exchange in the global catalog, you can increase the performance of lookup operations related to that attribute. For example, this attribute is used to read group routing information during the message transfer process. If this attribute is indexed, group routing lookup performance will increase. It's important to note, however, that if the forest functional level is not set to Windows Server 2003, adding a new attribute to the global catalog will cause a full synchronization of the global catalog, potentially adding significant network traffic. Another tuning technique related to Exchange and Active Directory involves configuring how Exchange makes use of domain controllers that are also functioning as PDC emulators. The PDC emulator is an Active Directory domain controller designated to perform an operations master role. The PDC emulator is responsible for handling replication and service requests from Windows NT 4.0 based clients and backup domain controllers. Since there is only one PDC in a given Active Directory domain, this operations master represents a potentially significant performance bottleneck. By default, Exchange includes the PDC emulator computer in its list of available and usable domain controllers. If non-Exchange programs are making heavy use of the PDC emulator, using the PDC emulator by DS access could cause performance problems on the PDC emulator computer, as well as on the Exchange server and the non-Exchange program computer. By configuring the min user DC registry value, you can configure how Exchange makes use of the PDC. The value data that is configured for the min user DC registry entry is the maximum number of domain controllers to contact before contacting the PDC emulator. In this scenario, we'll set the min user DC value to 4. This will configure Exchange to exclude the PDC emulator only when a total number of 4 domain controllers are available. When this condition is met, the PDC emulator is excluded from use and Exchange communicates only with the remaining 3 domain controllers. In this demonstration, we'll look at some of the settings that configure how Exchange interacts with Active Directory, and specifically with the Active Directory Global Catalog. Since Exchange uses Active Directory both for address lookups, routing, and password validation, making sure that your Active Directory installation is configured to support your Exchange servers is important to maximizing the performance of your messaging system. At this point, let's summarize a few key points from this session. In this session, we've covered a range of topics and techniques that should help you tune your Exchange installation to provide superior performance in the context of your specific organization's requirements. As we've discussed, in most cases, the performance of your system will be limited by the single slowest component or bottleneck. We've looked at some of the performance and stress testing tools that you can use to identify these bottlenecks and to find the 4 general areas where bottlenecks occur. In available CPU resources, disk storage, memory, and network connections. We've seen how planning and implementing an appropriate system topology can significantly increase the performance of your messaging system. Topology concerns that we've covered include designating MTA bridgehead servers and segregating your Exchange 2003 and Exchange 5.5 routing groups. We've also seen how providing an adequate number of global catalog servers to support an Exchange server is important for optimum performance and the advantages of dedicating at least some global catalogs for Exchange support. Finally, we covered a number of registry and Exchange settings that can be tuned to optimize the performance of Exchange in the context of your specific enterprise environment and messaging requirements. By understanding, implementing, and testing these settings, all of which are covered in the Exchange Performance and Scalability Guide, you can achieve the mix of Exchange functionality and performance that gets the most out of your existing hardware infrastructure and meets your unique organizational needs. To get more information on the products and technologies that we have covered today, we have some online resources that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/EXC-06 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. The Exchange Server 2003 Resource Kit is the definitive source for in-depth technical information and tools direct from the Microsoft Exchange Server team. Microsoft Exchange Server 2003 Administrator's Companion is the comprehensive guide to planning, deployment, and everyday maintenance. There are also a number of good books from other publishers. Windows Server Undocumented Solutions, published by McGraw-Hill, presents dozens of alternative ways to use and improve your Windows Server. Each solution is examined first in an overview. You'll discover undocumented techniques for installation, networking, multimedia tools, disk checking, backup, IIS tuning, Active Directory, policies, memory, upgrades, and much more. Enterprise Integration Patterns, Designing, Building, and Deploying Messaging Solutions, published by Pearson Education Press, provides a catalog of 65 patterns with real-world solutions that demonstrate the formidable power of messaging and to help design effective messaging solutions for the enterprise. Microsoft Exchange Server 2003 Unleashed, published by Sam's Publishing, is a guide that contains hard-to-find intermediate to advanced coverage far beyond typical installation and setup how-tos, including planning, migration, security, disaster recovery, and vast troubleshooting tips. Finally, Inside Microsoft Exchange 2003, published by Addison Wesley, provides instant answers backed up by rigorously exact procedures. The result is an all-in-one Exchange Server 2003 reference that email administrators need. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, or MOOC, which includes e-learning, MS Press books, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOOC is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals, support, and implement solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Designing and Planning a Microsoft Exchange Server 2003 Organization, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft Official Curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, or MCP. You can choose to go and become fully certified Systems Administrator, or MCSA, or a Systems Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification programs, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Holly Dias, Senior Marketing Manager for TechNet.
Many of you may be familiar with TechNet events and the TechNet website, but have you ever realized the benefits of being a TechNet Plus subscriber? a TechNet Plus subscription is the most convenient and reliable resource for IT professionals evaluating, managing, and supporting Microsoft technologies. With a TechNet Plus subscription, you can evaluate Microsoft software without time limits. This benefit allows you to try products at your own pace and make informed decisions without worrying about the software expiring. TechNet Plus evaluation software includes the latest Microsoft operating systems, server applications, and Office products. With TechNet Plus, you can also save time resolving technical issues. TechNet Plus subscriptions include a range of support options, including the complete Microsoft knowledge base delivered each month on portable media, and two complimentary professional support incidents to address your technical roadblocks. TechNet Plus offers centralized access to current, authoritative technical guidance, software, and support resources from Microsoft. IT professionals around the world rely on TechNet Plus every day to help them build their technical expertise and be successful in implementing Microsoft solutions. For details, visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/subscriptions. On the subject of TechNet resources, the new TechNet support page outlines all the support resources available for you. The enhanced TechNet troubleshooting and support page outlines all the ways IT professionals can get support assistance from Microsoft. From free online support options to subscription-based support, you'll find all your Microsoft support resources in one location at www.microsoft.com/TechNet/support. TechNet also provides a number of community resources. There are a number of free resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The TechNet newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post their technical questions, and because they are subscribers, are guaranteed a response to any technical questions by next business day from community experts or Microsoft support professionals. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can ever cover on this slide. Plus, the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details where you can attend a TechNet event live. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk with Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. Thank you very much for listening to this session.